Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
It is NBA trade deadline Thursday, and the Rockets have yet to acquire a center to replace Clint Capella after dealing him to the Atlanta Hawks in the four-team trade that landed Robert Covington and Jordan Bell here in Houston. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin. You can find me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. You can also find our show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. And hey, if you enjoy what we do here at Locked On Rockets, do me a favor, subscribe to us. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcasts, if you could subscribe, maybe write us a review if you've got the time, drop us some stars, I would sincerely appreciate it. So here's the thing, is the trade is now officially official. And the reason it's officially official, right, it was official in the sense that as of yesterday, the trade was agreed upon in principle, but it had yet to go through the league office officially. So there still could have been changes to be made. There could have been additional salary added to the trade, which was not done, unfortunately. So that's why we are now saying the trade is officially official. And that's important for a number of reasons, because the Rockets could have added up to, I want to say it was about $12 million of salary to this trade to receive either from one of the teams that was already currently involved or to expand the trade and have a fifth team get involved and acquire some salary in the form of maybe a center to replace Clint Capella's production or to have backing up PJ Tucker. And they weren't able to do it. So it seems like at the root, this isn't a, oh, we're going to be mad at Tillman Fertitta because he just wanted to dump all this salary. No, this seems like it was poor planning and lack of precision on Daryl Morey's part, thinking that he was going to be able to get another team involved in this short window. And then it sounds like maybe the other teams involved were pressuring the Rockets to make this trade official through the league office, which it takes all the teams involved to agree, yes, league office, we're going through with this trade, these are the details from our end, yada, 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 and then it pushes the trade through. In addition to that, so in addition to not being able to make an addition, I should say, to the trade and receive back more salary, either in the form of another trade chip or a potential center to replace Clint Capella or something of that nature. In addition to all that, there was a hope that the Rockets would be able to generate a sizable TPE out of this trade. But unfortunately, the league office did not let them structure the trade in a way that would have allowed them to do that. Now, what we're saying here is the way that the Rockets could have done this would have essentially been to structure it as two separate trades with, I think, the guidelines behind it. I'm a little bit fuzzy on it, but what would have essentially happened is Evan Turner would have come to the Rockets in one trade along with Clint Capella and Nene, I believe, and then the Rockets would have subsequently traded Evan Turner directly to the Timberwolves in place of him coming directly from the Atlanta Hawks. Sorry, it's a little fuzzy, but basically, rather than it being one legitimate four-team deal, it would have been broken up into a one-and-one deal between the Hawks and then a true three-way deal between the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, and the Rockets, and that would have allowed Houston the opportunity to generate like a $7.5 million TPE, which would have been huge for acquiring another player, because then you can just absorb a player directly into that volume, that TPE. That was not the case. The league office basically said, this is not in the spirit of the CBA. So very similar to the Nene situation from this past summer, where the Rockets tried to construct Nene's contract in a way that made him a living, breathing TPE with all of the likely incentives on the contract, trying to generate essentially about a $10 million outbound trade value. They tried to do the same thing here. The league office basically said, no, you can't do that. It's, you guys are, you know, it's not in the spirit of the CBA, and now they don't get to do that. So instead, they generate a $3.6 million TPE instead, which is frustrating because it would have been nice to have a sizable TPE to really bring in somebody in that, you know, $4 to $6 million range, because I believe now with the outgoing salary that the Rockets have sent out, they are now, they can stay with within the luxury tax window, or sorry, I'd say below the luxury tax window by not spending more than another about $5.5 to $6 million was the last figure that I checked. And obviously that's still up in the air. That can change before the trade deadline is over. The buyout candidates will impact that number as well. But if the Rockets stay below the luxury tax line this season, then they'll have their full MLE to spend this summer, which provides for future flexibility, which is a good thing. There is a chance that this summer the Rockets can have their full MLE at their disposal, which would be huge considering that now they have Robert Covington locked down for the next couple seasons. They've got everybody else locked down. So if they have their full MLE this summer, that's kind of a nice little bonus on top of everything else. Now, as far as this center position goes, just to kind of recap, right? So the Rockets dealt Clint Capela, Nene, Gerald Green, and a first-round draft pick with Capela and Nene landing with the Hawks, Gerald Green off to Denver, although Denver's just going to waive Green immediately, and he will actually continue his rehab process here in Houston. So he signed off on the trade knowing full well that he was just going to get waived and continue to stay here in Houston, so that works out there. As far as the Nuggets are concerned, the Nuggets dealt the likes of Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez, as well as Jared Vanderbilt, all the way to the Denver Nuggets. The Timberwolves also received the draft consideration from the Atlanta Hawks, as well as Evan Turner. And then the Nuggets got back a handful of Timberwolves players. Noah Vonleh, Shabazz Napier, and Keita Bates-Diop from the T-Wolves all landed in Nuggets land. And at the root of this, I'm basically fully convinced that the Nuggets only jumped into this trade because if you'll remember from yesterday's pod, this trade originally started out with Golden State as the fourth team in this deal, with Kevon Looney essentially being sent to Houston. Golden State eventually backed out of the deal, and so a fourth team had to be found to come in and make the money work and make everything line up. The Nuggets jumped right in immediately. I'm fully convinced the Nuggets jumped right in on this trade because they wanted Clint Capela out of a Rockets jersey. It makes too much sense because of how much trouble he gives their team because Jokic just can't keep up with Clint. So that makes a lot of sense as to why the Nuggets kind of randomly dove in at the last minute in order to help facilitate this trade. And even Adrian Wojnarowski reported that there was a Western Conference executive out there saying that he's excited that Clint Capela is no longer in the West. And my best guess would be that that executive is somebody from within the Nuggets organization, or if not the Nuggets, maybe the Minnesota Timberwolves with Karl-Anthony Towns, or even potentially the Utah Jazz with Rudy Gobert, because Clint Capela has made work of those three centers over his time with the Rockets. So it's no surprise that Western Conference elite teams are excited. Well, the Timberwolves aren't elite, but you know what I'm saying. It's no surprise that teams in the West are happy that Clint Capela is now out East and that they don't have to deal with him in a Rockets jersey. So now that we've kind of recapped that, moving forward in this next segment, there are a couple other trades going on. Well, really just one other trade going on. Kind of a quiet deadline so far. So hopefully this Thursday is going to be a little bit more hectic, a lot more going on. But we'll talk about the other trade that's going on, how that impacts the Rockets and some of their options, some of the things, some of the players that I have in mind that they should be looking at and that there are rumors that they are experimenting with, that they're trying to pursue. And we'll get to that in just 1 second, so don't go anywhere. And we are back in here for segment number two at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, discussing the NBA trade deadline Thursday, all the moves and everything leading up to this day. Now, here's the thing is, I said in this segment one that there was only one other trade. There's only one other trade that I think benefits the Rockets potentially. And so I'll get to that in just a second. There are a few other trades that have taken place. In principle, they have not yet been reported to the league office. The only trade that has been reported to the league office is the 12-player, 4-team trade involving Clint Capella and the Rockets already. But some of these other trades, so Sacramento agreed to trade Dwayne Dedmon to the Atlanta Hawks for Jabari Parker and Alex Lynn, which is a separate trade from the deal involving Clint Capella. Past that, there's also an agreement right now, at least, for Andre Iguodala to be dealt from the Memphis Grizzlies to the Miami Heat in the form of a swap for Justice Winslow. However, the talks are ongoing because Pat Riley's trying to be extremely aggressive and also wants to somehow make it a three-team deal and get Gallinari to Miami from the Oklahoma City Thunder. So the talks are fluid and ongoing there. The trade that I want to talk about that I think impacts the Rockets out of everything else, the 76ers have actually agreed in principle to acquire Glenn Robinson III and Alec Burks from Golden State. This trade is important because it involves two things. One, it means that Golden State probably not looking to deal Kevon Looney anymore, so he's probably off the table for the Rockets as a potential center replacement target. So that's how it affects the Rockets, part one. Part two, the 76ers have to actually clear two roster spots to be able to facilitate this trade because they're sending three second-round draft picks to the Golden State Warriors. So to be able to make this trade happen, 76ers have to waive a couple guys or potentially just trade a couple guys into another team. One of those guys, somebody on their roster that I think could be the potential center replacement, is Kyle O'Quinn, who spent some time in New York. In fact, back a couple years ago when we were mulling over all of the potential Melo trades and things of that nature, Kyle O'Quinn was the name who popped up a couple times that I thought, yeah, I'd like to see him in a Rockets jersey. He's a guy that I would, you know, appreciate having as Clint Capella's backup as, you know, Nene ages and, you know, eventually gets phased out, can't play anymore. Kyle O'Quinn's a guy that I would enjoy in a Rockets jersey. So he's somebody who his contract would easily fit into one of the Rockets' existing TPEs. So that's a possibility there. As far as the rest of the trades involved there, nothing else super impacting the Rockets. Obviously, it changes the NBA landscape, and we'll look at everything as a whole in tomorrow's podcast, basically kind of breaking down the fallout from the trade deadline as it all officially sits once everything's phoned into the league office and once everything's been made official. Because again, a lot of these trades could still change, you know, different dynamics. We saw it with the Rockets trade that there was a potential to add salary there. It didn't happen. These other trades, as I mentioned, could change in theory before the trade deadline, which is officially 3 p.m. Eastern. So it'll be 2 p.m. Central time for anybody listening in Houston or, you know, just lined up with the Central time zone. So at the time that I publish this podcast, we should probably be about 6 or 7 hours away from the official deadline. I take that back, 7 or 8 hours away. Math is not a strong suit. We've been over this multiple times. Now, here's the thing, is the Rockets still have other options out there. A name that has been really interesting to me is Christian Wood from the Detroit Pistons. He's a guy that could provide a lot of flexibility. He's not going to be a traditional big-bodied center. He's really more of a power forward. But again, in this Rockets system, you could maybe even make the argument that Clint Capella at 6'10", 240 is more of a traditional old-school power forward than he is a legitimate five. But in this system, he played the five, and so would Christian Wood. So here's the question is, what would Detroit want from Houston? I think that they might be able to pull something off by just dealing the likes of Jordan Bell and maybe a first-round or a second-round draft pick. I think that might be enough to get it done. But Christian Wood is a guy who would be able to provide a lot of versatility, can stretch the floor, can play above the rim. Really exciting player. Past that, you know, Rashawn Holmes is the name that we mentioned originally from the Sacramento Kings. Not sure what it would take to get a deal done there. Unfortunately, the Rockets don't have a TPE to be able to just absorb his contract. Another guy, Aaron Baines, same situation with the Phoenix Suns. Baines has been hurt a bit this year, so Suns from what I heard from some Suns fans and just that community, is they're looking to potentially deal him, but it depends on what the Suns are asking for in return. Aaron Baines, again, would fit in. He's a big-bodied center, 6'10", essentially the P.J. Tucker of the center position. You know, 6'10", can shoot from outside, absolute hustle machine. Would love to see him in a Rockets jersey if he can get healthy, but that's the big question, is if he can get healthy and what the Suns would be asking for from the Rockets for an Aaron Baines trade. Now, those are just some options that I'm throwing out there. I think one thing that I do want to talk about that I want to spend a little bit of time with is I do think that Jordan Bell can provide an impact to this team. He's not going to be your center. He's not going to be your solution for going against the likes of Nikola Jokic or Rudy Gobert or Anthony Davis. He's not going to be the solution for going up against some of the bigs in this Western Conference. However, what Jordan Bell can do is he can run the floor, he can play above the rim, he can play a very similar game to what Clint Capela provided you, and in short 10 to 15 minute bursts, he can give you some production off the bench. And I'll get to how I believe the Rockets are going to attempt to counter those bigs. I don't think they're going to necessarily need a big-bodied center, and I'll get to that in the third segment. But back to Jordan Bell, you know, he's a guy, yes, he's an ex-Golden State Warrior. Yes, he had one of the most egregious moving screens in history against the Rockets. You know, I get all that. But he's on the team now, right? If you handed me Draymond Green, don't care how they got him, if the Rockets suddenly had Draymond Green on the team, you bet your ass I would be cheering so loud for him. Because all his antics, everything that he does on the Warriors that we hate, Warriors fans love. Chris Paul was the same exact way. When you put a player who drives your fan base insane on that team, then you do fall in love with that player, because suddenly you're not having to play against all those BS antics. Suddenly those antics are in your favor. We saw the same thing with Chris Paul. Chris Paul, and for all his, you know, everything that he does on the court, for his basketball IQ, for his nitpicking, for just everything, complaining to the referees, all of that. We loved that for 2 years here in Houston. And so I'm expecting to love what Jordan Bell can do on the court in the terms, you know, as far as his athleticism, his production, what he can potentially bring to the table. I'm excited for it. So I don't care that he was a former Golden State Warrior, and I don't care about the jokes that people are making on social media about Jordan Bell joining the Rockets. I'm just happy that he's here and a part of the team and potentially can contribute or maybe be dealt, you know, redealt for another contributor like Christian Wood. And speaking of jokes, before we wrap up this segment and get to our final segment, which we'll probably let run a little bit long again just because it's one of those days where there's a lot to talk about, PJ Tucker goes on Instagram, right, and posts this photo of himself wearing stilts on the basketball court that somebody photoshopped, and it is the funniest thing. PJ Tucker absolutely won the social media game yesterday. It was just absolutely mind-boggling, hilarious to see that he's playing into it. And then there's all sorts of other memes, right, that are floating around social media about PJ Tucker being the new starting center for the Rockets. And they're all floating around out there. None of them really translate super well into a podcast, so I didn't pull any audio or, you know, whatever for it. But they're all pretty funny. They're all out there. I definitely recommend going and taking a look. Ben DuBose, who regrettably was supposed to join us on this podcast today, unfortunately had a work conflict, but he over at Rockets Wire, USA Today Rockets Wire, put together a article that features a lot of the different running social media jokes revolving around PJ Tucker, and I definitely recommend flipping through that when you are sitting down on your lunch break today or just, you know, after you get home from work. Definitely worth taking a look at that because it's some great content over there. So we'll get to our final segment here in just one moment. Some extended thoughts on the trade deadline, how it affects the Rockets, moving forward with the likes of Robert Covington and Jordan Bell, this new squad, their new identity in just one moment. So don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, talking all things trade deadline and, really quickly, buyout market. So here's the thing, right? is it's not the end of the world if Daryl Morey isn't able to add a legitimate center before the trade deadline passes. And look, I know that's not what most people want to hear. And I said it in the first segment, right? It was poor planning, I believe, on the Rockets and on Morey's part to not have another partner lined up before kind of moving things along with the Clint Capella deal, because it sounds like their plan was to use that $12 million window as part of the Clint Capella four-team trade to piece in and to get a replacement center. But then the other teams involved in the trade pressured the Rockets into completing the trade sooner rather than later, and the Rockets didn't have time to find a potential suitor to bring in another center. So again, sounds like poor planning, poor execution of the trade in that regard, because I don't think that the Rockets would have given up as much as they did in regards to trading Clint Capella, Nene, and Gerald Green and a first-round draft pick if they weren't trying to also bring back in a piece past Robert Covington and Jordan Bell and the second rounder that they did receive. I do think that they were trying to get somebody else involved, and they just weren't able to facilitate it. So with that being said, if they aren't able to find another potential trade partner to receive a center, the buyout market does exist. And some of the names, as far as centers go on the buyout market, Tristan Thompson from the Cleveland Cavaliers, who is probably going to be seeking a buyout, and then Ian Mahinmi? I can never say that guy's name. From the Washington Wizards is another guy who will probably be bought out and be looking to join a potential contender. So those two guys are a couple guys to keep your eyes on if you're concerned about the Rockets' center position and if they don't make a move before the trade deadline passes. Past those two guys, there are a bunch of other buyout candidates possible, but two names that have been linked to the Rockets are Marvin Williams and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, both from the Hornets. MKG still can't shoot threes, so I'm not super high on him. Although, you know, he's a versatile wing player, can, you know, add some wing defense, especially on a team that may or may not have a center that they feel like playing. Shoring up your wing defense as much as possible is an important aspect of not having a center, because you can be great on the perimeter if you're not going to have you need to be great on the perimeter if you're not going to have somebody back there in the paint to cover your ass if you can't guard on the perimeter. Let's face it. And then Marvin Williams is another guy who the Rockets have been, and Rockets Twitter especially, have been pining over for a while, and for good reason. He shoots the three ball really well. He can play a small ball five. Think, you know, Mike D'Antoni, Phoenix Suns days with Boris Diaw. He can play that role in this system. He's about 6'8", 6'9", 240. He's got some weight he can throw around a little bit. And he's a guy that, you know, alongside PJ Tucker, they could very easily hold down the five spot for this Rockets team. Now, yeah, you don't have a traditional five, but you're still able to play five out at all times and still have a couple of your bigger guys with PJ Tucker, you know, bigger being weight-wise, not height-wise, unfortunately, unless we get him a pair of those stilts like he was, you know, advertising for on social media. Anyways, Marvin Williams remains an interesting option. So those are some of the buyout candidates to keep your eyes on. I definitely think the Rockets will be making a play for at least one buyout candidate, and they've got two open roster spots to be able to do that. They've got space. They don't have to worry about dealing anybody. And then past all of that, right, they do still have Isaiah Hartenstein. Now, obviously, that requires Mike D'Antoni to actually play Isaiah Hartenstein. So that remains to be seen if that's even possible. But now that he doesn't have a legitimate five, there may be points where he is forced to play Hartenstein or forced to play Tyson Chandler. And those guys, you know, across, you know, 15 to 20 minutes a night can probably hold down the fort if all else fails. Now that we've got all of that out of the way for now, back to this new version of the Rockets, right? I see so many people worried, right, on social media about, okay, how is this team going to defend? How are they going to guard anybody without a big? How is this small ball lineup going to work? And honestly, I'm a fan of it. I really am. This is a last-ditch effort by Mike D'Antoni and Daryl Morey to really buy into what they believe is the best possible way to win with this team. And I say that because Adrian Wojnarowski and Zach Lowe both did their deadline day primer show on ESPN, which then turns into their little podcasts. But in that, there was very little Rockets news other than the fact that this very well could be Mike D'Antoni's last year with the Rockets, which we kind of already knew. But this was, they basically said this is a final push by MDA and by Daryl Morey to really attempt to win with Morey Ball and really buying into it, really buying into the space and shooting and transition play and all of that. And so this is going to be what we've seen in the past, but on steroids. And I'm honestly impressed. I'm impressed at their ability to shake up the roster midseason and to really push this new version of the team. And I think that when you look at it, yes, there's going to be concerns on defense. But at the same time, I think we need to flip it and look at how other teams are actually going to deal with this Rockets squad. How are teams that play Rudy Gobert, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis to a bit of a lesser extent because he's a bit more mobile than other bigs, but how are other teams going to deal with guarding James Harden and Russell Westbrook in space? They are going to have so much space offensively to operate within that they will be almost unstoppable. They're already each almost unstoppable. But imagining them, one, what are the other teams going to do? Jokic and Gobert are going to have to guard somebody on the perimeter. We already saw how poorly that worked out for Gobert the first time around, and the Rockets didn't even have Russ or James in that game, and Eric Gordon went for 50. Jokic is going to have to guard somebody on the perimeter when they play five out. And so the key to all of this is PJ Tucker has to not be hesitant with his shot, obviously. He's going to be the guy that most of these bigs are going to be guarding on the perimeter. And so if PJ Tucker is just willing to pull the trigger as soon as he touches the ball, then those fives are going to have to be out on the perimeter, which opens everything else up for the offense. Past that, if they opt to double team James Harden, guess what? We go back to Russ attacking in a 4-on-3 manner with all the space in front of him. So I'm excited about this. And you've added Robert Covington, who is a phenomenal defender, who is a career 35 or 36% three-point shooter. He's been having a bit of a down year, but he's had years where he's at 37, 38%, 39% even, I want to say, for one of his years in Philadelphia. So there's a lot of benefits to this trade where they essentially said, okay, Clint Capela makes your defense a little bit better, right? But he doesn't make your defense top 10. He's not that much of a defensive anchor. And so what they're going to sacrifice in the way of a little bit defensively, they're going to make up for by having a scorching hot offense for all 48 minutes that they're on the court. And I read, the on-off numbers for Clint Capela and how he impacts the Rockets' offense in the previous pod, but there was a distinct drop-off in their production while Clint Capela was on the court offensively. And so when he was off the court, the Rockets' offense would be ranked number one in the NBA for the time that Capela was off the court. And that's not a fluke. In 10 games, that's a decent sample size. That's, a bit under, an eighth of the season, whatever. That's pretty significant. So I'm buying into it because I don't want to. And look, I've been highly critical of the Rockets all season. Ever since taking over the podcast, you guys have gotten to know me a little bit more, and I've gotten to interact with you guys on social media quite a bit. I've been probably more critical at times than even Ben has been of the team. And that's just who I am. If I see something that I don't agree with, I'm going to call them out on it. Whether it's defense by James Harden or Russell Westbrook, or lack of effort, or coaching issues with Mike D'Antoni, or they're not doing enough in the form of spending to actually put a legit competitor on the floor for Tillman Fertitta. Whatever it may be, I have no qualms about criticizing this team. But at the same time, I also want to give credit where credit is due. And I'm impressed by this move. I really am. I think that this was a ballsy move by the organization. And here's the thing. For everybody who is worried that this is going to crash and burn and just be the worst move ever, right? This summer, the Rockets can suddenly deal Eric Gordon again. You can trade Robert Covington. You can deal whoever you need to. You can wheel and deal this summer to restructure the team again if this half season proves to be a horrendous experiment, right? Maybe this half season goes so poorly. Mike D'Antoni is fired in the offseason. Maybe even Daryl Morey's let go. Who knows, right? Tillman Fertitta is kind of a wild card. We don't know how he's going to react if the Rockets don't make some noise this year in the playoffs. And by make some noise, I mean Western Conference Finals at a minimum, because they've been there before. And it's got to probably be a competitive Western Conference Finals if Mike D'Antoni wants to keep his job, like at least a 6 or 7 game series against somebody like the Lakers or Clippers if he wants to keep his job. So past that, if that doesn't happen, if it's a disappointing first or second round exit, guess what? They can retool this summer. They can find a new head coach. They can flip Eric Gordon to another team for a potential center. Maybe a reunion in Indiana. Maybe he goes to Indiana. Miles Turner comes back to Houston. Suddenly they have a center again. There's options. You're not locked into playing small ball forever, but they have committed to playing small ball for half a season. And that's what I'm excited about again. It was a gutsy move by the organization to say, you know what, we're going to buy in to this style of play. We think that we value the spacing that this provides, and we think that we can make up for it defensively by being chaotic, by getting our hands in passing lanes, by running, you know, getting out in transition a lot more, and by forcing a lot of turnovers, which again, the sample size is small, and it's been against, you know, some not so great teams, Pelicans, who are, you know, playing better, Charlotte Hornets, not a great team, Dallas Mavericks, good team, but no Luka Doncic in that one. So small sample size for the turnovers that they're generating while playing small ball, and I'm not counting the Utah Jazz because they didn't have James and Russ in that one. But it seems like that's the trend. You sacrifice rebounding, but you're able to play more aggressively in the passing lanes and force more turnovers. And the switching scheme really bugs a lot of teams. It really does. When you watch Daniel House or PJ Tucker fronting on some of the bigs against other teams, it messes with them. Not a lot of teams switch. In fact, the Rockets switch more than any other team in the league. And so that does mess with other teams, and it messes with what they want to achieve offensively. Meanwhile, the Rockets get to do pretty much whatever they want on their offensive end of the court, which is James Harden, Russell Westbrook in space, and wide open three-pointers for the rest of the team. So I think that's where I'm going to wrap things up for today. I hope that I have sold you guys with my confidence in this version of the team, and I hope that it works out. This Lakers game will be a great first test. Russell Westbrook may or may not play. So here's the thing. Is Russell Westbrook may or may not play? He has the left thumb injury. That's why he did not play against the Hornets. He was kind of sitting that one out. And it is a back-to-back game. You've got the Lakers tonight, Thursday, and then you've got the Phoenix Suns Friday evening. So if Westbrook's going to play one of these games, it's going to be the one against the Lakers. So hopefully he's ready to go come playtime, because I want to get a look at this new version of the team. Robert Covington, Jordan Bell will also be suited up and will be there playing with the team as well. I would imagine Robert Covington is just going to get thrown immediately into the starting lineup. Jordan Bell's going to get a little bit of burn. It's going to be a fun game, and it'll be an interesting game because it'll be the first outing that we get to see with, you know, against a really top-tier opponent. Still kind of counting the Utah Jazz game as a bit of a fluke with Eric Gordon's 50-point burger, but I'm excited. And I hope you guys are excited too. I'm ready for this team to make some noise in the back half of the season, and I really think that they can at this point. So that will be where we wrap things up. As always, thank you all for listening so very much, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.